This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Draft Week. We are finally here, just 3 days away from night one of the 2024 NFL Draft. We have been waiting. Oh, my gosh. Can it get here already? Well, we're finally into draft week. Welcome to the show. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live here until 3 p.m. And we have sliced it. We have diced it. We have thriced it, as a matter of fact. But we have a good topic of discussion for you today, which we will get to in short order. But we have... If we had a meat tenderizer, the meat we had, if the meat's the NFL draft, it is flat as a pancake
yes,
now.
Yes, it is.
We have beaten it to a pulp.
We have beaten it to a pulp. And, you know, most of, bless their hearts, most of our listeners are right there with us. We talked, I go out to dinner over the weekend, go to the supermarket. I mean, whatever you do, man, everybody's like, okay, so if Brian Thomas Jr. is still there. And, you know, and if
Steve's checking out cantaloupes.
And they're throwing names. I'm like, wait, all right, so if Xavier Worthy's there and he's fast, and then they we had the question today around that was sitting around the office. So you got Brian Thomas Jr., who now we've heard has a torn labrum, which, by the way, that kind of fell right on our show the last weekend.
Yeah,
Brian
Dane
Thomas
Brugler,
Jr.'s got a rotator cuff or some sort of thing going on with his shoulder. And then you got A.D. Mitchell, who's a type 1 diabetic, which is a manageable condition that you got to keep on top of it all the time. So... which one? Which medical, you know, thing is
more importantly? Yeah. How much does it make him slide?
Well, yeah,
if at all.
Because if you're rotator torn labrum,
you can fix that.
You can fix it, and you'll be good to go. Type one, it's ongoing, and you can manage it. And he has done a very good job of that. But even at Texas, they said, you know, sometimes you got to, you know, he gets out of whack, and you can tell when it does. So that you can manage throughout his career. That's an ongoing thing.
Yep.
Wow, you think we're in the weeds? Like, we're in the first 5 minutes of the show, and we're talking about medicals on guys. But that's what it's been like for me. You too, Brownie. I mean, I go out, and there's people like, okay. And they're just, like, start right in.
Yeah. And it's the same thing every time. It's all receiver all the time.
Yeah. You know? Our buddy, good friend of the show, and former teammate of mine, Ross Tucker, said he had, you know, in his podcast where he is, listen, he goes, there are certain teams out there, he did not mention Buffalo, but there are teams like Denver and some other teams out there that have absolutely are telegraphing their pick. Now, you can do that if you're the Bears and Washington and New England at the top of the draft. Mm-hmm. Nobody, you know, everybody knows. But you get down into the weeds, down to the 20s, 28s, and down to the teens even. Plus, generally speaking, you don't want to go in. We've talked about it. You don't want to go into the draft where you got to take this guy at this position or get a guy at that position. It's a tough place to be. Tough place to be. Because sometimes those guys aren't there.
Right.
They're just not there. And you can't get them.
It does happen. Probably more than people realize. Especially when the general consensus is there are not 32 players in this class with first-round grades. So somebody's going to be left out in the cold and want to move out of round one because their board is bare for round one talent, and they're sitting there with, who knows, the 24th pick, and they're looking to move back to 35.
We should probably, too, go over what's your take? I'll just ask you, what do you think sets apart a guy with a first-round grade from other guys in the draft, like a second-round grade, third-round grade? What sets them apart?
I would say in most cases it's elite physical talent of some kind. They have elite physical traits, as we've said here a lot. Second, I think they have a body of work that makes scouts and personnel executives feel comfortable because it's more information to go off of and less of a projection. And then third, I think there has to be some level of ability that indicates the capability to dominate. At least, if not all the competition, dominant at the college level to the point where you feel comfortable that they're going to be able to make plays for you or perform at the NFL level, depending on position.
There's also
injury history helps, though.
Sure, clean injury history helps. And there's a couple other characteristics, too. One, you go talk to their college coaches, their high school coaches. You talk to the kid himself, and you find out, is he a kid who is he an elevator? Does he elevate the guys around him? Is he a us guy, a we guy, or is he a me guy? Is he an I guy? Is he selfish? Or is he a let's go do this together kind of guy? Or is he, I'm going to make my own stuff and I'm going to do my thing? And football sets guys apart like that because you've never been able to be one of those guys and be as successful as you need to be. That's another box you've got to check. And the other one would be, why is he playing? When you get down to the root of his core being and his motivation about why he's a football player, why is he a football player? What's his goal? And you get guys who seriously say, I've had a guy look at me in the eye when he was a fresh drafted rookie. He says, I want to be the best guy to ever play the position I'm playing. I want to be that guy. I'm going to be the guy who people look at and say, that's the best guy to ever play that position. And he convinced me. He convinced me. And he's in the Hall of Fame. That's another box you can check.
Hmm.
Now, certainly, you can say it and not mean it and get away with it, but that's the kind of core kernel that they're trying to get at.
Yeah.
So you're right. I would agree with you, Brownie. That's a lot of boxes you got to check because, mm-hmm. let's face it, if you're going to be a first-round draft pick in the NFL, they're going to hand you a check with eight figures on it. And if you're good, they're going to guarantee it.
Most first-round contracts.
You got to check those boxes. Fully. You've got to check those boxes. And in this draft, and like most drafts, that's just a couple too many boxes for every single guy to check. There's just a couple of boxes that you get down into the 25s, 6s, 7s, or maybe the 20s, 20, 21s. They just don't check every box the way you'd like to see them check it. And that's when you start going, okay, we're going to get up a guy where we know he checks that box. And that's where you start fighting. And we talk about it all the time. Well, Bill's got like maybe 18, 20, 22, 24. We don't know. But there's not till 32. And then the Patriots have got 40 they think are first-round grades. The Chargers have got 18 that they think are first-round grades. So you can see where it starts to get iffy and why they guard this information. So
I love how you made New England the outlier with 40 first-round grades.
Totally coincidence. So that's, that's where we're at. And that's why it's so intriguing, this whole NFL, and it's the same with other sports too, but man, it is a whole, science and art mixed together to try and get these guys. And they're not getting, at 28, you can bet the Bills are outside the guys they think are worth a 28th pick of the draft.
Brandon Bean said it. I mean, he said, look, we have more guys on our board with first round grades than we had last year.
That's part of what he said that I believe.
But not 28.
That's part of this, what he was talking about that I actually believe. Mm-hmm. He was telling the truth.
Yeah. Let's go around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin with one Zach Wilson, Steve. Last we left him, he was floundering as the starting quarterback for the New York Jets. At the end of the season, it was clear that he was available via trade. The only problem is, no one wants Zach Wilson, at least in the NFL. Which, could they trade him to a CFL team? I guess they could. They would just release him. Because what are you getting back from the CFL?
Nothing but
a couple of ruses.
Cash.
Yeah. that they don't have.
Right.
So, in anticipation of a trade that may never come, Zach Wilson has decided he will not be at voluntary workouts, the off-season conditioning program for the Jets, until his situation is resolved, shall we say. I could understand how that could be awkward. So I get it. And it's, the guys are just working out and doing classroom stuff. So I understand it. It is going to be interesting to see what the Jets choose to do with regard to drafting a future quarterback. Like, do they do something on day three, take a flyer on somebody and try to develop somebody behind Rodgers? No, I mean, this could very well be Rodgers' last season. I mean,
yes.
And you didn't You didn't have a great backup plan, you know, last year, obviously, at the backup quarterback because Zach Wilson was horrible. And I think I'm being kind.
He struggled. But it was the whole team struggled, and it wasn't all his fault. And that's the problem. I mean, you can have lower level of quarterback play if the roster.
I mean, they have Tyrod, so they probably.
That's right. And I'll say this. Tyrod is, well, we know, Bills fans know. Tyrod is really good. Really a great locker room guy, great leader, good mind to have. His experience is unbelievable. I'll bet Aaron Rodgers is probably glad Tyrod's there. You know what I mean? Another guy with some credibility that he can bounce ideas off of and talk to. Tyrod's an excellent pickup for the Jets.
But I don't think anybody's taken Zach Wilson in a trade. Nobody's taken that. They know the Jets want to throw him overboard. They're just going to wait until they release him, which I think will probably, I'm guessing for cap purposes, would probably take place after June 1st. You know, save a little bit more on this year's cap.
Is there any way in an open competition that Zach Wilson beats out Tyrod?
I don't think the Jets think want him to.
Well, I don't either, but you know what I'm saying, though?
I don't even think he's going to get that opportunity.
Yeah, it's not going to be like they're going to keep Zach Wilson instead of Tyrod. Yeah, so, he's donezo over there, I think.
I think they're kidding themselves, though, if they think they're going to get some kind of compensation for him in the form of a trade. Because I think some team would take a chance on a 25-year-old quarterback, just not at the cap figure of $11.1 million. Like, that is not happening. And that would be his cap hit to the Jets. If he's cut after June 1st, let me see here. Oh, it's the same number. Oof. Cap hit of $11 million now or later.
He's like a top five.
Because he's in the last year of his deal. That's why.
Top five pick, man. They're not. He's on the.
I could see someone bringing him in for the minimum and, letting him be a backup or something. But, God, that was a big swing and a miss.
Yeah. I mean,
Sam Darnold followed by Zach Wilson. Pick number 3 in the draft, pick number 2 in the draft.
They
botched both.
They spectacularly whiffed. That's, oof. Now I get it, too. You're bound by the draft itself. I mean, Josh Allen doesn't come out every year. Pat Mahomes doesn't come out every year. Joe Burrow doesn't come out every year. Justin Herbert doesn't come out every year, Trevor Lawrence. You don't get those guys every single year. So sometimes you get Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. I get it. And the Jets were a little bit of a victim of that. But you look at the other names out there that are quarterbacks that are not signed. Like Ryan, what are you going to do? Ryan Tannehill, Brian Hoyer, Blaine Gabbert, Trevor Siemian, now you're down to A.J. McCarron. Our good friend Matt Barkley's out there. Logan Woodside, Felipe Franks, and Garrett Gilbert. I mean, you go down the list. That's it. And,
I don't think anybody touches him until he's released. I think that's kind of how it goes because nobody's taking on that salary.
Right.
Because nobody sees him as a starter or even
they're bringing him in
to compete to be a starter.
They're bringing him in to evaluate him, and they're not going to pay him $27 million for a workout.
I mean, I don't know. Do you think Denver with Jarrett Stidham and some other guy who I can't even remember would consider him if they come out of the draft empty? Maybe, I guess.
Yeah, now you got me there.
I'm trying to think of hold on, I'll look it up real quick.
Maybe, but that's, I don't know, bro. That's bringing Zach Wilson as an actual option. That's got to be an absolute no. Sean Payton is not going to do that.
I want to say he wouldn't, but if you're desperate, you're desperate.
And I hear you, but Zach Wilson's, he's.
Yeah, Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci.
Okay, there you go.
Those are your two quarterbacks on the roster right
now. If DiNucci was, what the Giants was, the little flash in the pan.
Are you talking about Tommy DeVito?
Oh, is that Tommy DeVito?
That's Tommy DeVito. You got the DiNucci? Wrong Paisano, Steve.
Oh, I did get the wrong Paisano. So this DiNucci's not even like
Ben DeVito. DiNucci was previously a backup.
DiNucci's behind DeVito.
I would say he's not as good.
Oh, there
he
you go.
He was a backup or a third stringer for a while in Dallas.
So where does Zach Wilson fall in that mix? You literally got me on the DiNucci-DeVito thing.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know. It's Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci in Denver. If they don't come out of the draft with a quarterback, that could be a landing spot for Zach Wilson to compete, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There are not many good options, I guess I should say. I did read this week, though, Steve, you know, we kind of wondered if Seattle might be a sneaky team in the quarterback market. Apparently, they're over the moon. They have Sam Howell after trading for him with the Washington Commanders.
Everybody's over the moon right now.
I'm guessing it's lying season, but.
Come on.
I was like, really?
DiNucci,
really excited.
DiNucci's on a 1 year.
Oh, yes, he is.
1 year, $985,000 contract. He's a 27-year-old, second year in the league, or two years in the league, coming into his third.
That's a place maybe he lands if the Broncos come out of the draft with nothing at quarterback.
I can't
imagine that's going to happen.
I don't know.
Hey.
Well, I mean, there are teams out there suffering from quarterback withdrawal.
I think Broncos fall into that category.
Minnesota falls into that category.
Right, but they have pick 11 and 23.
That's right. They've got some ammunition. They've got some capital. But, I mean, So,
yeah, it's
Vegas.
It's not good.
I mean, Vegas, you know, you can see that. But, you know, you never put anything over on the Raiders.
Yeah.
They'll do anything.
They like reclamation projects historically.
They do. And they've sent
an option.
They've sent a couple of reclamation projects to the Hall of Fame.
That is correct. Jim Plunkett, right? Being one of them.
Tom Flores. Yeah, so they're better at it than anybody else, but still.
Then we all know that these days people like to bet on just about everything. So odds have now been put out. Betting odds have been put out on the teams most likely to draft certain players. And one betting house has put out odds, and it's got the most likely teams to draft Texas speed merchant receiver Xavier Worthy, who broke the record for the 40 time at the NFL Combine, running a 4.21. The two teams that have the best odds, according to this betting house, to draft Xavier Worthy, the Chiefs or the Bills. Two teams that they picked. Presumably, in the wake of the Stephon Diggs trade and the Rashee Rice off-the-field incident that will likely lead to an NFL suspension, to no one's surprise, I mean, I bet if you could put Xavier Worthy on that list, any other receiver that might still be available in the bottom half of round one, probably pretty good odds. The Chiefs and the Bills are going to be at the top of the list.
The Bills are in every conversation like that, and the Rashee Rice thing is really interesting because, I mean, he emerged as their number one because kind of by default because everybody else was dropping the ball all over the place. But you talk about, you know, the way things are going to come down with Rashee Rice and whether he's going to even be available for what? How long is that going to be? 6 games? 8 games?
I don't know. It's pretty bad.
It should be pretty bad.
He owns both cars.
Mm. And they're racing on the
eight
freeway.
8 counts he was
in
charged
Texas.
With.
I mean, that. Yeah.
Well, Texas doesn't play.
Well, you shouldn't play with that kind of stuff. I mean, good grief. What are they doing? Yeah. So, anyway, what does the NFL feel about stuff like that? Now, if it was gambling, it's a year, man. You're done.
Right. Yeah, they just reinstated some of the guys that got bounced last year.
From that Detroit thing.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and those guys were built. Those guys weren't even betting on football. They were betting on stuff on football grounds.
Yeah, in the Detroit Lions.
Like they
facility.
Were just walking. Yeah, they're just walking around on a betting app inside the facility, betting on, like, I don't know, horses and stuff. What are you doing?
NBA games.
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that.
Nope.
So, and that's just for that. So, and This, to me, and I get it. I mean, the NFL, I mean, when you start messing with the dollar signs,
integrity
then,
of the game.
Well, yeah, that then it's like, oh, man, they're going to hit you with a big stick. This is more of a human side of it, obviously, where he endangered himself and everybody around him.
Yeah.
What that shouldn't, you know, should not some level that be just as important?
Yes, it should.
I'm not saying the guy's no way he's going to get a year, Rashee Rice, whether he deserves it or not. We can debate all day.
Right.
But he's not going to get what those gamblers did.
Probably not, as sad as that is to say. Former Bills and Steelers cornerback Levi Wallace visiting the Denver Broncos today. It's expected that he is going to sign a one-year deal. He is a free agent, so he'll be moving on to his third NFL club, provided that deal goes through. Speaking of the Steelers, Steve, they had their pre-draft press conference today with Mike Tomlin and GM Omar Khan. And Omar Khan, the biggest thing that he said is he gave indication that they're not super interested in trading down from pick 20 where they currently sit. This was his quote. In my opinion, you never trade away from a good player. But obviously, if there's ever a scenario that makes sense for both sides, you have to look at it. So he sounds reluctant to trade back, which, you know, some people speculate. Is that a team the Bills could do business with if they feel they want to move up right to get a receiver that they might deem as sliding? So Steelers might be a hard team to pry out of their spot at 20.
Yeah, because they, like we talked about earlier in this segment, they probably got 20 or 23 first-round grades on guys.
Yep.
And they're not going to trade out of it. And I see, too, there you can make it both sides of the argument because we have seen all too often players who go in the third round should have been taken high in the first with the kind of career they put together. Mm-hmm. There's always those outliers. Steph Diggs is one of those guys, you know. And the guy you're talking about a minute ago, Levi Wallace. I mean, there's a four-year starter for Buffalo on a playoff team and then goes to Pittsburgh and starts for those guys. He was not drafted. So there's all kinds of spectrum here that, you know, where these guys fall on, but I'm just there's no doubt Steelers have at least that number of first round grades on players.
And they need offensive line help, particularly at center. And
I mean, where Barton goes?
Well, Graham Barton from Duke or the Jackson Powers Johnson right guy. But 20 might be a little high, maybe not, but I guess if they like the guy enough, they'll just take him at 20 and forget about moving around.
Yeah, that's the Steelers. I mean, they had Dermonti Dawson, who actually anchored that thing for all those years in down there. They probably have a good feeling about that position and what it can do for a team when it's a stellar guy. You know, Dermonti's in the Hall of Fame. And he was a special player. Yeah, I mean, I feel it, you know. Yeah.
We mentioned how the Broncos are expected to sign free agent corner Levi Wallace. They're also insisting they have no plans to trade wide receiver Cortland Sutton despite being bombarded with phone calls and trade proposals. I think there's a difference, Steve, to saying we're not trading Cortland Sutton and we do not plan to trade Cortland Sutton. I think that leaves the door open for a, hey, if you bowl me over, you can have him.
Right.
We do not plan to trade him. However, you know, like that's what it says to me. It's not like
maybe
we're not trading him.
Yeah, but
it's not declarative enough.
Here's the thing: I don't know why I don't know why GMs do that. Because if one GM calls another, you think they're not going to take the call? Of course they're going to take the call. Say, hey, what about it? Who's he talking to? Who are these? I mean, who?
29-year-old receiver put in a good season last year. He's going to want money, like all of them do. He's got, I think he costs a little over 13, maybe 14 right now, but he wants a bigger contract because he knows he's getting close to that age 30 season. So he's hoping
at least long term, right?
Yeah, he wants more money. I don't think Denver's going to give it to him. So do they move him? I don't know. So, I mean, they already traded Jerry Jeudy away. So I don't know if you're trying to get a young quarterback.
KJ Hamler's gone.
If you're trying to get a young quarterback in the fold, I don't know if you want to get rid of your number one receiver. That's probably not a good formula to help your new quarterback if you're able to draft one.
Wonder if he's
here in the draft.
I wonder if he's has given them intimate, you know, told them that, hey, I'm not coming in if I don't get a new deal, or if he's going to hold out this last, you know what I mean?
We'll have to see. I don't
wonder
know.
If he's going to be disgruntled or if he's going to come in and play hard and get a contract.
He might even have 2 years left. I can't remember off the top of my head. In any event, there is other Broncos news. They unveiled their Mile High Collection uniforms, and to no one's surprise, they went back to the Orange Crush days of yore. The big D on the side of the helmet with the Bronco rising out of the center of it, and the true orange and lighter blue, kind of like a sky blue, uniforms that we all remember from the 70s and 80s. So I tip my hat to the Broncos. I think that's a good move.
I don't think they're doing – Cortland Sutton was one of the guys on the little video that they're putting out for the new jerseys. And he just – dude, he's on a four-year $60 million contract averaging $15.2 a year. And he's signed till 26.
Oh, okay.
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's why. I mean, they're saying, no, they just paid him. This now, is going to be his fifth. He's in 5 years, in fifth year. So, yeah, he's not going anywhere.
So we saw the throwback uniforms that are the old Mile High from the 70s and 80s. Their new uniform is just tweaked from what it has been. They kind of look like Boise State to me. Who are also the Broncos.
Right, right.
But some of the new uniform accents, I don't know that they've changed it enough.
Well.
The throwback is great.
Yeah.
The new iteration of the Broncos uniform,
The blue helmet, it's a sharp color combo.
They should have just gone back to that. Like on a permanent basis.
Well, the classics are back. I mean,
right, but that's part of the Mile High collection. I think their new uniforms are largely the same color scheme. I think we were just watching footage of that. Our MSG viewers were looking at it.
It's
just slight differences from the current uniform. The color scheme, darker blue. I don't like the darker blue.
Yeah.
See, these are the new uniforms that they have now. They're just the same thing.
The helmets are the dark
ones. The numbers are a little different.
They do have some white helmets that they're sporting, but the helmets, remember the old John Elway with the D on the side? They were sky blue helmets.
Yeah.
Maybe a little darker than sky blue. I don't know what described color it was, but these are all the navy blues.
Yeah.
And that's,
they look like Boise State.
They're not as sharp. I'll be honest.
Nothing against Boise State, but if you're an NFL team, you don't want to look like a college team.
Well,
I'm pretty sure
Boise State looks like the Denver Broncos, not vice versa.
Okay. That's
Broncos
fair.
Don't look like Boise State. Boise State looks like the Broncos.
All right.
Can I be that guy?
Sure.
I'm that guy.
Topic of discussion today, we kind of flip things a little bit. What prospect do you not want to see drafted to an AFC rival? Maybe there's a player that you're worried if they land on the Bengals or the Ravens or the Chiefs or the Dolphins, as you're going to be like, oh, brother, I don't want that draft prospect on that team. Give us a call. Let us know who is your ixnay to an AFC rival. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We got open lines for you. If you don't have time to hit us up on the phone lines, you can always hit us up on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. Got draft expert from ESPN, Matt Miller, joining us in the second hour of the show. But your phone calls are coming up next. We'll lead off with Judy in Buffalo when we come back here on OneBillsLive, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live in draft week. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And topic of discussion today, what prospect do you not want to see drafted to an AFC rival. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. And leading us off today is Judy in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Judy?
Forgive me for digressing again. You know where I stand. You know, for years, for the last 2 years, I've been talking receivers and receivers and receivers, okay? But here, there's an underlying problem with the Bills that nobody seems to be talking about. Last year, it cost us two games, one with Philadelphia, one with Kansas City when it really mattered, and that was our kicking game. I cringe every time Tyler Bass gets out there to try to kick a field goal from 40 yards because I know it's going to veer right. Now, what in the world is going wrong? Why cannot that be corrected? Because we have, frankly, a very difficult schedule this year, and it could come down to field goals here, there, and everywhere. So I just, it's not a topic of conversation, and I think it should be.
Okay. Yeah. We'll entertain that right now, Judy. Thanks for the call.
I would say this, Judy. You're right. Last year, for the first time, the Bills really did not bring in anybody to push Tyler Bass in training camp.
He just signed an extension. So he was not going anywhere.
And he wasn't going anywhere, so they didn't even go through the formality of it. I think you can probably bet that they will do that this year. And you're right. You go back even those two games that you mentioned and also opening day in overtime against the Jets, they gave up a punt return. Now, that counts as the kicking game. I know you're talking about field goals, but the kicking game is comprehensive.
Don't forget 12 men on the field either.
And then they got the 12 men on the field against Denver there where they kicked it wide and we should have won that game. So you're right. It was a roller coaster last year. Sometimes they were fantastic, and other times they were an atrocity. And that roller coaster needs to be leveled out, I think. Well, you need to get more dependable in every aspect of it. And it starts with Tyler Bass. You're right, because he's the most I think he's the crowning piece of your special teams crew because you want him to be perfect, particularly mm-hmm. in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you saw the team early on in free agency re-sign Matt Hawk. And the last time he was here as the full-time punter was in 2021, and that was one of Tyler Bass's best seasons. So is it an operational issue? And they feel Matt Hawk could offer something more consistent there as a holder? I'm not sure, but it is very interesting that he's back on the roster for competition, you know, for Sam Martin.
Right.
But is it competition for punting or something else tied to Tyler Bass? We don't know, but it is interesting that he was brought back after he was here very briefly when it was unclear whether or not Sam Martin would be able to punt in the Kansas City playoff game after he injured himself in the Pittsburgh game, right. In the playoffs there. Or was it? Yeah, I think I have that right. I might have my weeks mixed up, but it was at the end of the season going into the playoffs. So, yeah, there's a lot that I think special teams wants to write that didn't go well last year. And I would bet that, you know, Matt Smiley and Coach Harkey, his assistant, are all over that, in addition to being all over what is going to be a very new-looking kickoff this year, too. You pretty much tear up your playbook for kickoff team, both return and coverage, with the new rules going in this year. So.
Yeah, and it's a really good question. What usually happens is, and the key guys in your special teams are obviously your kicker and your punter and the long snapper, and those three guys are where it begins. And the rest of the special teams roster gets filled out from the positions that are on offense and defense, obviously, from tight ends, linebackers, safeties, and backup corners, backup wideouts, backup running backs, all of those guys, backup offensive linemen. All those guys go into it, and – when you get down the roster, some guys they bring in, like Tywan Jones. Remember when a few years ago when Tywan had a nice run here in Buffalo, he was brought in as a special teams guy, and it was his job in training camp just to be proficient enough as a safety.
No, he was a running back.
As a running back, just to make sure they felt okay with him on the roster. If something happened to all the running backs, he could finish a game for them. But he was brought on as a special teams player. But And like Medakevich, same thing. He can play linebacker and does on occasion, but he's here for special teams. There are guys like that at the bottom of the roster, and that's who fills it out. So, yes, as important as Tyler Bass and Matt Hawk and Sam Martin are, and the bulk of the special teams guys turn into professional special teams guys from other positions. So they're going to – it's up to them, and particularly the young guys on the roster – to come in and prove they want to play special teams and want to contribute in some way, shape, or form. And that gives them an avenue onto the roster where they can get better as a safety, better as a corner, better as a linebacker, better as a tight end, whatever, what have you. And then they can develop and then come off special teams and be a first and 10 player. That special teams right now are formulated from the backups. They're from other positions. And then guys evolve into really good special teams players, and then that's their job. They don't worry about them as a linebacker or tight end. But young players coming in have to learn that before they come in. You're right, Judy. Tyler Bass is the poster boy for what all the special teams kind of go with, and that's kind of how they're all rated. It's by the quality and the quality and consistency of the place kicker. But there's a ton more that goes into it. And this year, there's a lot of unknowns because of the new kickoff rules.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how it takes shape in training camp this year. Let's go to Mark in Jersey City next. What's up, Mark?
How are you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call. Edgerrin Cooper, I don't want to see him go to any AFC East team. I don't want to see him go to any Chiefs because they lost Willie Gay, and we know what he did for them. He was Allen's spy. And that's the guy I don't want to see on Dolphins. I don't want to see him on the Pats. I don't think we'll see him on the Jets because they have Quincy Williams and Mosley. But, yeah, that's the guy. And, I just don't want to see that. It would be low-hanging fruit to take a receiver, an offensive player. I would have said Byron Murphy, but everything that we're hearing now, he's, you know how the leaks start the week of? He looks like he's going to be, might be the first defensive player off the board. So thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, sure thing, Mark. Yeah. Edgerrin Cooper is a good pick. Yeah, I just said that to Steve last week. I don't want Edgerrin Cooper going to the Dolphins because then they might have somebody that could actually run down Josh Allen in the open field.
Right. I mean, Josh has made those guys look bad his entire career, and a guy like Edgerrin Cooper does change that. He is he's a big, long linebacker who plays off the ball in the middle of the field and goes sideline to sideline. He's like an athletic Tremaine Edmonds. You know what I mean? He's more instinctive and athletic and freewheeling. I mean, he is.
He comes downhill, man.
He runs and he's there.
Electric tape.
He's fun to watch. I mean, if you tell yourself, go on YouTube and put Edgerrin Cooper's highlights in and then tell yourself, yeah, the Bills have already drafted this guy. And you'll be so excited that you fooled yourself into thinking that they've already got this guy. It's like, all right. That's the kind of tape he is.
He's Peyton one of the Wilson guys, isn't far off either. The NC State kid.
You want a guy like – you want him on your team. That's all there is to it. This is a guy you want on your team. His film is like, hey, look at this one, you know. Yeah, it's a good call. You don't want him anywhere near the AFC East or even the conference if you can avoid it.
Let's go to Joe in Arizona next. What's up, Joe?
Hey, how we doing, fellas?
Good.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks.
Born and raised in Amherst in Williamsville, out in Arizona. Start off by just telling you guys how much I appreciate having your show to listen to when I'm so far away, and it really keeps me in tune with everything.
Awesome.
So, I have a quick comment for you, then I would hear your opinion on it. So I've heard a lot of opinions on stuff, the way this kind of goes with you guys, but with wide receivers, we talk a lot about how expensive it is to trade up into the beginning of the first round. You give up too much capital. And we talk about how great the depth is at the wide receiver position this year. So it's just surprising to me that there's not more said right now about staying put at number 28 and getting, you know, one of our top guys, hopefully Brian Thomas or A.D. Mitchell or something in that spot. And then turning around and trading up as high as you can into the second round and grabbing, you know, Ladd McConkey or Troy Franklin. And all of a sudden you got two of these ridiculously good young guys, whoever you think they are. Let me know what you guys think on that.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, Joe, at all. You know, you're thinking double dip and try to get two receivers in the top 50 picks. And the reason why I don't think it's outlandish is because of what Brandon Bean said at his press conference last week. He basically said the drop-off between the bottom of round one and the top of round two is less than it is from the top of round two to the bottom of round two. So clearly on their board, they see a major drop-off or a more significant drop-off from the first half of round two to the second half, where there's much less difference between the bottom of round one and the top of round two. So I think you could slice that two ways. You could either slide out of the bottom of round one, if there's not much difference between your 28th best player and your 38th best player, it's probably easier to slide out of round one, go to the top of round two, then you still have 60, and you could pick again in the third round with a pick you probably acquire for sliding back 10 spots. So that's another way to look at it. If you trade up from 60, you know, I mean, I could check the value chart real quick, but if you trade up from 60 and you want to get up to, say, 40, yeah, you gotta part with more than one of your fours, probably two of your fours and your pick at 60 to get up to that second-round pick around 40 or so.
And you could push that, you know, off to next year, too. You could give a third next year or something and move even higher.
Yeah, you could do that.
That kind of thing. You've got two twos next year, which I think you probably want to hang on to. But, yeah, you could do that. I like that idea. Get the next guy at number 28, the next wide receiver that's there. And, you know, there's going to be three or four of them that we've talked about that are going to be there, from, you know, Brian Thomas Jr., Xavier Worthy, Xavier Leggett, Keon Coleman, and you just go down the list. All these guys are going to be there, or one of them, and then trade down, and then you're looking at maybe trading up into from 60 to get into like 42, and maybe you grab like Ladd McConkey's there, or somebody like that.
Ricky Pearsall
will be there. So you've got a chance at getting two of those dudes that are actually okay. You know, you're thinking that are intriguing. Yeah, or maybe get two of the guys I just mentioned that you might have been able to get at 28 or were considering. So I like that idea a lot. Using number 60.
You'd rather go up from the bottom of round two rather than out of the bottom of round one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd take the 28 guy and move up from 60 to maybe 30 spots.
Yeah.
Go to 40.
And then you're done on day two.
Go
done.
To 40 or 30.
You're not 30. Picking again until Saturday.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
You weren't gonna. You're
I'm just
pep-
putting it out there.
You were just gonna pick one guy anyway, and now you pick one on day two,
a little earlier,
and then get out, and then you get ready for your other eight picks or seven picks.
All right, we got to take a break here, but more of your phone calls when we come back. Anthony will lead us off when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live. Draft week has arrived. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and asking you, what prospect do you not want to see drafted to an AFC rival? And we've had some submissions already, but we go to Anthony in Buffalo next. What's up, Anthony?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. So my guy that I don't want to see go to any AFC team, or really an AFC East, is going to be Michael Penix Jr. Okay. I think he's an underrated quarterback because of his injury history, but you know that kid is he's a great player, steps up when he has to, and it's just, you know, he's just a guy that sitting behind Aaron Rodgers, getting healthier, getting better, and learning to be a pro, I feel like would just be a disaster. And then, you know, we would be stuck with another QB that's puts up issues with our Buffalo Bills. So that's my guys, and hopefully draft goes well. Good luck, and I'll listen for comments. Thanks,
guys. Let Steve take this because he's been on the Penix horse for a while.
I'm with you, Anthony. If for instance, if the Patriots draft Mike Penix, it's a dark day for Buffalo. I think the guy can really play. He had four season-ending injuries in four straight years, then got the extra COVID year, and then took a redshirt year for Washington. The last 2 years he was at Washington University.
And healthy, right?
And healthy, completely healthy for 2 years. He took the 108th ranked offense in the country, and the very next year they were number two. They went from a 4-11 record to a 11-2 record, 11-4 record, and then a 14-1 record, and we're playing for the national championship with Michael Penix. The guy is he's a leader. He's got all that. He's got a pro.
He's got
a live arm.
The best arm in the draft.
He's got a live arm, and he seems to be poised. Now, he is not a Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson.
He's a pocket guy.
He's strictly a pocket guy, but that's the way the league is legislated, and the rules are made so the guys stand back there and beat you from the pocket. Ultimately, every playoff team needs a guy that can do that. Mike Penix is that guy. I would not be shocked if that's the guy the Patriots want. I'm getting poo-pooed by a lot of draft analysts. No, not a lot of people agree with me because of his injury history and all of that.
He's also 24 years old.
And he's a little older dude because of the long college career. But I'm with you, Anthony. I think Mike Penix is pro-ready. And what I've been able to discern, I haven't talked to anybody about him, but from reading the articles and all that, he's the kind of guy that elevates the guys around him. I mean, he's a guy other players want to join in with. That's a problem for this division if Mike Penix goes to the Patriots, in my opinion.
Yeah. One bit of news coming from Diana Rossini from The Athletic. The New England Patriots are listening and taking calls from teams looking to move into the three hole where they currently have the pick. GM Elliott Wolf is running point, but Patriots president Jonathan Kraft, who is the son of Robert Kraft, is heavily involved in the decision-making. If they move back to 11 in a deal with Minnesota, watch them take Penix there. Could happen.
Yes, they could do that.
We have to take a break, though, because when we come back, we're going to be joined by ESPN NFL draft analyst Matt Miller as we talk draft, latest rumors, and Bills fits, among other things, the Bills' best value. What does he think that is at pick 28? We'll check in with him next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome into hour number two on a Monday. It's draft week. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and happy to be joined now by ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider Matt Miller joining us here on the show, and recently put together with his colleague Jordan Reed, best fit, best value at just about every pick in the first round, and we'll dive into that in short order. But Matt, first, thanks for giving us some time. When you get to draft week, is it like Christmas for you? What is this week like?
It's like Christmas when you're a parent, you know that stress of making sure everything's done. Right. You're staying up super late putting bicycles together and Barbie dream houses, and you're worried you forgot something. So it's like Christmas once you've had kids. But Thursday, it's really a culmination of a year of work. That we get to see, over those 3 days. It's a ton of fun. And then the process rolls right over. Next week, I'll be writing about the 2025 NFL draft. So it never truly stops. But this is a It's a long week, guys, but it is a great week. And it's so fun to get to hop on with you guys and break down each individual team, whether it be with you guys or the other places I get the advantage of talking to this week.
So you get in this mode of where you get this stuff all put together, and we talk about it here on our show. You do nothing but get ready for this thing. And then Roger Goodell steps up, and he starts to with that first card, and we all realize that we really don't know exactly what's going to happen. But what does your gut tell you about what may be the surprises in this draft, particularly at the very top?
Yeah, I think we know what will happen at the top. I feel good about that since the Chicago Bears brought in exactly one player at the quarterback position in the pre-draft process. That was Caleb Williams, so feel pretty good about that one. But you're right, Steve. After that, it is you're waiting. And I think this year there is that added level of intrigue. Who will that number two pick be by the Washington Commanders? We know it will be a quarterback. Will it be Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner from LSU? Will they go for the upside of a Drake May from North Carolina? Will they go for somebody who has risen as much as any player in this pre-draft process in J.J. McCarthy of Michigan? So the Commanders certainly have options at the quarterback spot. And to me, that's the first domino that's going to fall, guys, because what Washington does at two will inform what New England can do at three, what options they have, whether that be stick and pick and take a quarterback, whether that be trading out and letting a team like the Minnesota Vikings or the Denver Broncos come up. So I know that maybe people think I have an obligation to sell the intrigue that is the NFL draft, but this year it really sells itself because we truly don't know what's going to happen at pick number two overall.
Yeah. And just as a reminder for everybody out there, Matt will be a part of ESPN's Day 3 broadcast on Saturday at noon Eastern time, which will be airing on ESPN and ABC. So as I mentioned, you recently, along with Jordan Reed, your colleague, put together kind of best fit, best value at every pick in round one, and he went Xavier Worthy for fit at 28 for the Bills. You went with another receiver for best value. Tell us why and who.
Yeah, the best value here. Best value, again, you're looking at who's available on the clock as opposed to where they're ranked, right? So it's not necessarily a true, hey, this is our need, this is the fit, but it's looking at my big board. And so I believe, I don't have it in front of me, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, it was Adonai Mitchell from Texas, I believe is who the pick was. It's been a long week since we did that exercise, so I'm glad I remembered. Mitchell is a big play waiting to happen. We saw that in his five career college football playoff games, five touchdown catches. I had a scouting director tell me, if you just watched his tape against Alabama, you would think this is one of the best receivers in the class, because when he was with Georgia and when he was with Texas, he absolutely beat up Nick Saban's secondary. That makes me feel pretty good about a prospect when you can go at what I consider to be the best defensive backs coach of all time in Nick Saban. When you can go at his secondary, you're going to have a ton of success in the NFL if you had that production. 6'3", 205 pounds. He is a speedster, 4.35, 40-yard dash, the NFL scouting combine. And I think he's an ascending prospect. There were times where, you know, Texas leaned on the run with Jonathan Brooks, certainly early in the year. There were times where their quarterback, Quinn Ewers, struggled to connect on the deep ball. We saw Quinn struggle through some injuries this year. That certainly affected the deep ball, and that is what Mitchell does best. So to me, he's a player that's just scratching the surface of what he can be. And now that you have a Bills depth chart without Gabe Davis and without Stephon Diggs, I think this is an opportunity to kind of combine those two players into one, where you get the deep threat of a Gabe Davis, but you get the sure-handedness. You get that go-to factor, Stephon Diggs. Mitchell had one drop last year in college, which is phenomenal considering the types of targets that he actually saw in this Texas offense. So I think the sky's the limit for him. He's a really, really good player that would immediately benefit this offense.
We heard that Mitchell is dealing with type 1 diabetes, or has. He's a type 1 diabetic. And we've also heard news that Brian Thomas has a torn labrum. When you get late news like that, although I would imagine the medical revealed the type 1 diabetes for Mitchell to all the teams at the combine, does that impact their draft stock? Could those guys slide at all in round one? And if so, how much with those kinds of maladies?
I think, and I'll say that information did come out around the time of the combine, at least on Adonai Mitchell. Now on Brian Thomas, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago when I got a text from someone that said, hey, there's a shoulder issue here. They weren't certain what it was. but I know that information has since come out. I think with Mitchell, you're looking at a situation where you got to talk to the coaches, particularly the strength coaches. How did he manage it? How much did it affect him? I never saw it affect him during the games. And I think that would be one of the questions as you have a player that's learning how to manage that disease, learning how to handle it, what's best for him. I know there were some anonymous reports about maybe he was kind of cantankerous at times. Hey, I get the same way if I skip breakfast. So I definitely can relate to that aspect of it. But I don't know that we'll see a gigantic drop from either guy. It may affect them. You know, instead of going 17, you might go 23 or 24, something like that. But I don't see a significant drop for either player just based on my conversations with teams around the league right now.
What player might sneak into the first round who maybe didn't start out there?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't start out there. Quinion Mitchell, he's definitely the player that has pushed himself the corner from Toledo, who had that great Senior Bowl process, then a great combine performance. He has pushed himself into that range. If we want to go back to, you know, January 1st until now, he's certainly someone that has pushed his way up the board, probably more than any player other than J.J. McCarthy in this pre-draft process. Now, a couple guys that I think could be on the fringe of making it, Darius Robinson from Missouri, another player. I've gone back and looked at my Senior Bowl notes. Before the Senior Bowl, I thought, here's the top 50 player. After the Senior Bowl, after talking to coaches in the SEC, after his pro day, I think Darius Robinson has pushed himself into the top 32. So I look at two players, if we could flash back 4 months ago, that probably weren't being talked about a ton, especially Quinion Mitchell. He feels like a lock as a top 20 pick. I think Darius Robinson will be a top 30 pick. Both players have helped themselves tremendously just throughout the process that is the pre-draft.
Matt, Brandon Bean, general manager for the Bills, spoke to the media last week, kind of in his pre-draft press conference. And one of the interesting things he said was he feels that there is a smaller drop in terms of quality of talent on the board from the end of round one to the top of round two than from the top of round two to the bottom of round two. What kind of merits do you think that gives someone like some team like the Bills, who if they don't like the value at 28, might try to back up and get out if the difference between player 28 and player 38 isn't all that much?
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. You know, in the process of doing my final rankings, where I put a grade on 474 players, you can find that on ESPN.com. That was something that I actually found, Chris, was that, you know, player 25 and player 40 might not be that different this year. And I would say that carries on through the draft, where we have kind of these big, deep tiers of players. So I think for Buffalo, that's great news. You know, something that your rival, the Kansas City Chiefs, did several years ago was they traded out of the late first round and still got Chris Jones at the top of the second round. That extra value helped them in building this dynasty that they have now. It also does help to hit on that player at the top of the second round. So I think for the Bills, you look at scenarios where if the talent is wiped out, if you're sitting at 28 and you say, hey, our receiver targets, we wanted to trade up, we couldn't, that board's been wiped out, great opportunity to trade back. The other side of that would be if you get to 28 and you still have six or seven guys on your board that you really like, then you feel confident that you could move back. But I will say this, it's specific to Buffalo. You have to look at so many teams right there with you as being in the same area of need that you're in. You know, we know that Kansas City wants to get a wide receiver. San Francisco could be after a wide receiver. You cannot rule out the Detroit Lions at wide receiver. And then at the top of round two, you have the Carolina Panthers sitting right there at 33. You have the New England Patriots sitting right there. There are so many wide receiver needy teams. And I think that's where with Buffalo, you have to be somewhat conservative, because when everyone in the league knows what your perceived top need is, pretty easy to get jumped. We saw that happen to the New York Jets last year. Everyone knows they need a left tackle. All the left tackles are wiped out except Broderick Jones. And then here come the Pittsburgh Steelers jumping them to get him. So you have to be a little more conservative. Sure, you would love to trade back and get that extra value. But and I know Brandon's very, very smart about this. You have to be aware of what's left on the board and understanding how far back you can actually slide before your board gets wiped out completely.
Last one, Matt. You know, this is a kind of time of year where you hear all the GMs talking to their local medias and you can't believe any of it. But you hear some stuff, and there's been some stuff over there. Like, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. has been one of the top players in this draft from the jump. But now you're talking about guys like Malik Nabers, who may jump him, and other teams are interested in that. Is there any truth to the rumors where some of these guys flip-flop? I know the quarterbacks will flip-flop back and forth. What about Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr., and how close in are they in their respective tier?
Yeah, Steve, that's something I was hearing back even at the Senior Bowl. Excuse me. My suspicion is we're hearing the Malik Nabers talk from 30 NFL teams that are not the Chicago Bears and Arizona Cardinals, because those are the only two teams that Marvin Harrison Jr. met with on a top 30 visit in the entire pre-draft process. Now, he had meetings with 9 teams at the NFL Scouting Combine. I have a suspicion we're looking at a lot of teams right now that say, we're not going to be able to get Marvin Harrison Jr. anyway. The next guy on the list looks pretty darn good to us. This happened back in 2021 when everyone knew Trevor Lawrence was here in first overall. You'd start the area NFL team say, you know, we like Zach Wilson just as much as we like Trevor Lawrence. And then when it was assumed that Zach would go too, you start hearing, well, we like Trey Lance and Justin Fields as much as those guys. So there's definitely, I think, an eye toward, hey, we're never going to have the opportunity to get that player. That is no slight to Malik Nabers at all. He's a fantastic prospect. Amazing speed. What he does after the catch is phenomenal. He deserves to be a top 5 or top 6 selection in this class, but I think it's far and away that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the best receiver in this class. You can make an argument he's the best overall prospect in this class from an NFL readiness standpoint, from a trait standpoint. You know what you're getting in the pedigree with his dad being an NFL Hall of Famer, so he is as clean as they come when we're looking at wide receivers.
Matt, thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it. Enjoy the draft, especially day 3. We'll look for you on ESPN and ABC.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right, that's Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider, and he will be on ESPN and ABC's day 3 coverage of the NFL draft starting Saturday at noon.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'd never really thought about it in those terms, but when you start hearing these guys are flip-flopping, say, well, we like it, it's because they know they have no shot at the other guy.
Yeah. Well, we'll be just as happy with this guy.
Right. Or they're saying, we like this guy just as much, and hoping that somebody passes on him, thinking the other guy's, you know what I mean? Makes a lot of sense. And it's, we all see it. I mean,
except in the case of Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Sorry, it was a big
It's true. Nobody was thinking that.
Let's get back to our topic of conversation, which deals with these prospects in the draft. And which prospect do you not want to see drafted to an AFC rival? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Let's go to Kevin in Hamburg next. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The answer to your question, I think the one I would worry about is Marvin Harrison going to any of our rivals' Easter conference. I mean, his nickname in college is Maserati Marv. If that was his nickname when I watched some of his college games.
Yep.
You get called a name like that, that means you're fast. You know, it's sort of like when you name a linebacker a maniac or something like that. You know, you can call the name, you're fast. I would not want him to go to one of our, definitely our division, but even in our conference, with a nickname like Maserati Marv, I just can envision how much of a nightmare would be. So
yeah, you're right. He is a really great player, no question about it. Brownie and I have gone round and round about nicknames, and I've always said, now I've never heard, I know I've heard the Maserati Marv thing.
Gus Johnson gave that to him,
right? But I'm a big fan of nicknames because it helps you get a handle on it. Like Chop Robinson, everybody loves because his name's
Sauce
Chop
Gardner.
Sauce Gardner, you know, Cadillac Williams. You can go back through the list. Primetime. You go all through the list of nicknames, and I think it's like a 25 or 30% boost in your draft stock if you have a really good nickname. So if you're a 22 to 32 pick, you can go into the teens with a good nickname.
What did you make of Matt's? Because I asked Matt, like, how far do you think Brian Thomas Jr. or A.D. Mitchell could slide, knowing Brian Thomas has a torn labrum in his shoulder and A.D. Mitchell is a type 1 diabetic? And he said, yeah, well, it might knock you from 17 to 24. Now I'm thinking, holy crap, we're in striking distance now.
Maybe.
If that happens.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't know, though, because I don't see teams that need him dropping out of there not taking him.
Yeah.
Well, a torn labrum.
They don't have to drop out. They just have to pick somebody else.
Right. A torn labrum is not an ACL.
No, it's not.
And for a wide receiver.
It's a 3 to 4 month injury.
If it was a throwing arm for your quarterback.
Or recovery.
Maybe. Right? So, but you're not going to tell me that a team like Pittsburgh at 20 is not going to take Brian Thomas Jr. because of a labrum. if he's their guy. They're grabbing him.
Yeah.
There's just no same thing with the Rams and Jacksonville and, you know, even Miami. I mean, those guys, they're not going to pass on a player they really like because of an injury, a four-month injury. The type 1 diabetic from A.D. Mitchell, I don't know. I never heard of anything like that. I'm sure there's been other kids, I say kids, other men coming out of this draft or other drafts with the same type of problem. I've never heard about what it did to their draft. I couldn't tell you. I don't know there's a history there.
Yeah, I'm not.
But he's right. A torn labrum on a wideout is like, that's off-season dust, you know, dusting and cleaning. You know, it's nothing.
Let's crack open the tweet sheet at One Bills Live to see what prospect you do not want to see drafted to an AFC rival. Tweet sheet brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. And Colin says, Brock Bowers to the Jets. He has been mocked to them an awful lot. I think the only thing that could trump it is a top offensive tackle. And knowing the Jets probably want shiny objects for Aaron Rodgers, it could very well be Brock Bowers, who is a nightmare after the catch.
Colin might be completely disappointed because I think that's exactly where Brock Bowers is going. I don't think the Jets have the discipline to go for an offensive lineman, even after they absolutely burned their house to the ground last year because of their offensive line.
I think the only way Brock Bowers is not the pick at 10 is if by some miracle one of those top three receivers are still on the board at 10. Like if Chicago doesn't take a receiver at 9, you know, and Odunze is still there, for example.
Yeah.
Maybe they take Odunze over Bowers.
Right.
But I don't know that that's any better than Colin's scenario. So,
right.
From 17 for MVP, I really don't want the Pats to get Drake May simply because I see so much Josh Allen when he plays. Really? I don't know if I see that. I could be wrong. Much has been made about Drake May's footwork, Steve, and how it's kind of all over the place and not very refined.
I got to be honest with you. I kind of poo-poo that mechanic. They said the same
thing. It's fixable.
They said the same thing about Phillip Rivers. He had a funky delivery, and he did. But
yes.
The guy threw for 9 gazillion yards as a pro and is a Hall of Fame candidate. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You can say, well, he never won anything. Well, he played for the Chargers, so that's not his fault. You know, I don't really put much stock into, like, he's got bad footwork, he's got a funky delivery. The guy can sling it, and he's a big athlete. I like him. I'm not going to get caught up in the mechanics.
All right. Well,
certainly
then
you can, you know, I mean, Josh works on his mechanics, and he's gotten better, and I just don't think that is a deal breaker. I think there's a lot more boxes that are a higher priority for him to check than his footwork.
All right, well, then let me throw this at you. What if New England – would you rather have New England take Drake May at 3, or what if they trade out with Minnesota, go down to 11 and get Penix at 11? Would you rather have the Patriots have Penix or Drake May?
Well, I like Penix better than May.
Me too. You'd take May over Penix to go to the Patriots.
Yeah, I'd take Michael
The Bills.
If it was my pick and I was picking for my team, I'd take Mike Penix, not Drake May.
Right. So you don't want the Patriots to have Penix.
I don't care if Drake May goes to the New England Patriots if the alternative is Mike Penix. You know what I mean? So I hope the Patriots draft Charlie Bag of Donuts, you know. Instead of
is he in this class?
I'm pretty sure he's in every class. We just don't know. He's called by a different name.
He's got a different name. He does. You're
he's
right.
In there.
Yeah,
he's
one
in
year
there
his name
somewhere.
Was Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Okay. Ed Lee on the tweet sheet says, the only individual player that can lift a franchise is a quarterback. In this case, no AFC team is likely to draft an impact quarterback, so not super worried about that. Oh, the Patriots are picking 3rd. Kind of off the wall, but if the Chiefs got Xavier Worthy, I would not prefer that, even if I don't want him for the Bills. So, Edley, not a fan of Xavier Worthy for the Bills, but he doesn't want him going to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I get it. It's all the scar tissue from Tyreek Hill being a Chief, and Xavier Worthy is not Tyreek Hill. Xavier Worthy weighs literally maybe what? 50 pounds.
He weighed in 165.
He might be 50 pounds.
He is a wisp
below what Tyreek Hill weighs, and he's not as and he's fast, but he's not as explosive. I mean, Tyreek Hill goes fast on his first two steps. He's going 9,000 miles an hour. Now, Worthy is very fast. He runs a good 40. All of that stuff. Tracks the ball deep. He catches the ball well, but he's not Tyreek Hill. I'm not saying he's not going to be a really good pro, but I don't want to see the Chiefs get any good players, and Xavier Worthy is a good player, but I don't think he's at this point, as a rookie coming out, I don't think you can expect him to be a Tyreek Hill kind of difference maker, which is, I guess I'm projecting. I think that's what you mean when you don't want Worthy to go to the Chiefs, because you don't want a replay of Tyreek Hill being in that offense. But he's a good player, but he's no Tyreek Hill.
Jack on the tweet sheet says, I'd really like the Fish, Jets, and Pats to not get any of the top four wide receivers. I'd also like Bowers to not be drafted to any of them. And as far as KC and Cincy, I hope they go D or offensive line. Bills need to get the weapons to keep up in the arms race. I would agree with most of that.
Yeah, I think touches all the bases.
I think you have a good chance, that not one of the top four wideouts go to the Dolphins, Jets, or Patriots, especially if all three are off the board before the Jets are on the clock at 10, top three receivers. They still might want the fourth. I mean, do they like Brian Thomas and take him at 10 and say, well, we're not fooling around. We're going to take him right here.
Yeah, the Patriots are probably going to take a quarterback at number three. Yeah. The Jets at 10, we've already talked about it, either offensive line or Brock Bowers, right, the tight end. And then, that's about
Dolphins it. Dolphins are at 21.
Dolphins are 21.
And they need D-line and O-line help. They lost Christian Wilkins, and they lost some linemen.
And they've got Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle. So, they're kind of deep. They're kind of set at wideout. I would see – now, think about this. If the Dolphins did take a wideout, I would envision somebody like Ladd McConkey or Ricky Pearsall or one of those slot receivers that can kind of be underneath and give two of that outlet. You know what I mean? Instead of getting one of the big-time outside wide receivers, which will probably be gone by then, they may do that if they take a wide receiver. But I think it's unlikely that they do that at that spot.
Yeah, I mean, they re-signed Braxton Berrios, so he's back in the fold, and maybe he takes the slot role again this year. We'll have to see. But not as desperate for receiver help as they are for line help in the trenches, for sure. One more here on the tweet sheet before we have to take a break. That's from Steve, who says, at this point, there's nobody for me. It's too hard to translate how a prospect will turn out in the NFL. Jefferson was the fifth wide receiver taken at pick 22 in 2020. There are always diamonds in the rough, and that's why the draft is so much fun, because it's a guessing game for all GMs and everybody else for that matter. So he doesn't care who goes where, because you got to see him play first. I guess that's the reasoned argument of the day here from Steve. So That's right. I mean, it makes sense. I get it. Looks like Zach Wilson, who we just talked about, Steve, is on the move. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, former Jets starting quarterback and number two pick Zach Wilson, is being traded to the Denver Broncos. We just talked about it. Jared Stidham and Ben DiNucci. We're not doing it. The deal includes a late-round pick swap, sixth for a seventh, and the Jets will pay some of Wilson's $5.5 million salary. So the Jets pay money to get rid of him.
And give up a draft pick.
And give up a seventh in exchange for a sixth. Here's the question now, Steve. Can Sean Payton fix Zach Wilson?
Well, if he can, it will be one of the great reclamation projects we've ever seen, right? Mm-hmm. Because this guy's got
issues.
He's got a live arm, but he
was frazzled last year.
Yes, and frazzled. He was on a bad team. I get. Well, he's not going to a really good team now, but that's quite the triumvirate at quarterback for the Broncos right now. Jared Stidham.
All right, handicap it for me.
DiNucci.
I think DiNucci's out, but what do we think? Stidham versus Zach Wilson. two former AFC East draft choices, Jarrett Stidham, a fourth-round draft choice of the New England Patriots, right. Zach Wilson, the number two pick in the draft by the Jets.
I'm going to lean towards Zach Wilson
mm.
because I'll say this. You know what his life's been like in New York, right? I mean, it's been – he's been getting hit with a sledgehammer over the head for a couple of years now, right? Denver's going to be a refreshing change for him, particularly
well, – and it's closer to home, which is Provo, Utah.
That's true. And he's going to have a head coach with an offensive playbook and a way to get the most out of his guys. Now, he's gonna have a short leash, and Sean Payton coaches hard. So how he reacts to that, I think he'll soak that up. He'll be like, listen, I'll take hard coaching. Just don't give me a hard life when I leave the building like I had in New York. I think it'll be a refreshing change for Zach Wilson, and at least he'll – I don't know if he'll play better, but I think he'll be happier.
Okay. That begs the next question, Steve, which is what are the Broncos now doing at pick 12? Because – I mean, could they still draft a quarterback? Sure. How likely is that? I would say it's safe to call it less likely. So, I don't know. I think it's less likely that they take a quarterback there.
Maybe.
Do they fall into the receiver pool now?
Oh, yeah, or offensive line pool.
Well, they need – yeah. I mean, I get that. I mean, they signed Matt Pertin free agency. He's kind of been a journeyman offensive tackle and not a great one. They signed him away from the Giants.
But you got to remember, too, now Denver's got the 12th pick, and they don't pick again until the 76th pick.
Right. So maybe they're a candidate to move down.
Right. They got a fourth rounder at 121, three fifth round picks, two sixth round picks. So they've got. Eight picks in this draft, three inside the top 121. If I'm the Broncos now, you're sitting there going, all right, well, let's trade back. You could trade back with somebody who wants to keep like the Buffalo Bills, who wants back in 18, where they would trade up twice. Somebody could leapfrog you and go all the way into the 5-6-7 range with your 12 pick and give you whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
But that takes there's a lot in that. Now Denver's kind of in the same in a different spot now.
They do need corner help.
Right.
So at pick 12, do you take Quinyon Mitchell, the best corner in the draft?
You get a sure on Arnold because you got to think, particularly on the defensive side, anything outside the quarterback spot with all the guys that are available at the top of this draft, you got to think bang. At 12, you're going to get a sure thing. You're going to get a sure thing corner. You're going to get a sure thing offensive tackle. You're going to get a sure thing wide receiver probably.
Could.
Do you do that? Or do you look at your roster and say, we stink. Give me more picks.
Because we don't have a lot to begin with, and we need help.
Or do you say, well, I don't know. I kind of like Mike Penix.
I don't think he would have traded for Zach Wilson then.
He might, because then you got to think the Raiders and Minnesota are thinking, okay, Denver's set. We're not going to have to get up for them.
So it's a smokescreen. The Zach Wilson.
It's a seventh round pick. Who cares?
Yeah,
you gave up a bag of footballs for the guy.
Yeah,
and if it helps you on draft day, stay put and get the guy you really want without giving up anything else. Boom diggity.
Yeah, Zach Wilson's smokescreen trade. We still like Penix.
Zach Wilson doesn't make training camp for the Broncos. He's released.
It's him or Ben DiNucci or Jarrett Stidham.
Nah, he'll be here. Yeah.
Break time for us here. When we come back, more of your comments on the tweet sheet. Still taking your phone calls, too, at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What NFL draft prospect do you not want to see going to an AFC rival? More of your calls and tweets next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And working our way through the tweet sheet, but still taking your phone calls at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. What NFL prospect do you not want to see drafted to an AFC rival among some of the answers we've had? Brock Bowers to the Jets. Marvin Harrison to anyone in the division. And we've also had some other submissions. Edgerrin Cooper to an AFC East team, a linebacker from Texas A&M who is probably fast enough to run down somebody like Josh Allen. That could be a problem if he's on an opposing defense in the division. So you let us know what you think at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers to get on board, and we do have open lines for you. But we go back to the tweet sheet here where Mr. Game 7 says, Leggett to Kansas City because they will use him properly and have a solid weapon who can line up anywhere. Yeah, Leggett is versatile. I mean, South Carolina used him on jet sweeps and out of the backfield. He's a former high school quarterback, so he can throw the ball too. So, yeah, they had him do a lot of things in addition to being a deep threat.
Yeah, he's a big dude too. I mean, I like he's heavy, and he seems to play with some grit. You've heard me talk at times about Eric Molds being one of those guys who's a phenomenal athlete, really good wide receiver, and was a kind of a fighter, really aggressive, gritty receiver who was looking for contact and
wanted to overpower just, you.
Yeah, just really an intimidating wide receiver. Leggett is a little bit of that. I'm not going to say he's Eric Molds, but the dude's got some stuff, and I like him a lot. Now, he's the only knock on him is that we've only seen him play really good for a year, one season. And he's a long-time college student. I mean, the guy's been in college for like 5 years, and he's only had one really good year, and it was this last year. Now, I think it was what, Spencer Rattler was his quarterback?
Yes.
So Spencer Rattler was his quarterback. And
who was also in this draft
pool. So he got a little help from him, but that's the knock on him. And so you got to think, okay, what's behind the lack of production up until that point? And there's really hasn't been a good answer yet.
And after 5 years of college, to still be considered a little raw is interesting too, which is some of the ways in which he's described. Like he doesn't have route savvy yet, that kind of thing. Andrew on the tweet sheet says, well, if the Chiefs trade up to get Brian Thomas Jr., I will be incredibly mad, not because I don't think we have a chance at getting him, but that's just another good weapon for Patrick Mahomes, who has proven over the last couple of years doesn't need world beaters to get you all the way to the Super Bowl. He's that good.
He's good.
But, yeah, that would be – can you imagine us taking – phone calls on Friday if the Chiefs trade up and get Brian Thomas in front of us. Oh, brother.
They might. I mean, they may want him. They may think that's the thing that'll get us back to the third Super Bowl in a row. We'll get Brian Thomas Jr. It's all going to be. Yeah, okay.
I'm just going to say it. The Chiefs have done it before. They went up from 27 to 10 to take Mahomes in 2017. So,
and I'll say this, too. There's a lot of they surprised a lot of people, though. I mean, 10 teams passed on Mahomes, and I get it. You get it. You're convicted about a guy. You stand on the table and hump and pound on the table for him. If you're right, hey, awesome. There's a lot of teams that had Pat Mahomes as a little bit of a. Well, he played in college, kind of like he does in the pros, and that's a big jump to be able to do that. And not a lot of people have ever done it before. So that's why everybody kind of passed on Mahomes, thinking, I don't know if he can do that at the pro level. I think that's asking a little too much. Well, he answered the questions. So, yeah, there's a chance they jump up high again to get one of these dudes. But let's face it, whoever they jump up for, it's going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive. Because they're going from whatever they're going to trade up for all the way back to 32. That's a drop. That's a big drop for whoever takes it. So we've done the math here. And that's, that's with the 28th pick, not the 32nd pick. And it's expensive.
It is indeed. Seth on the tweet sheet says, man, I'll be very upset if Kansas City gets Troy Franklin at the end of the first. Dude is going to be a star, and I really want to see him in red, white, and blue. That's another speed merchant out of Oregon who can really stretch the field and has production at the college level and of more than just one season, if memory serves. So he is an interesting case study. He's very slight framed. similar. He's a little. He's taller than Worthy, but you know he's only he's like 6'3", 6'4", but he's like 177 pounds.
Right.
You he's can see it just looking at him.
Yeah. 6'2", 175. He's tall and wispy. 6'2" is big. He's got a big frame. Seems to catch it well. And like you said, you know, like all these guys up here, the guy, he can scoot. So
he had 891 yards receiving and 9 touchdowns his junior season in 13 games. And then last season, 81 catches for 1,383 yards, averaged 17 yards a catch, and had 14 touchdowns. The one knock is he did have 9 drops last season, which was up from his previous high of 3.
Right. He was catching – who's his quarterback? Oregon. I can't remember.
Bo Nix.
Bo Nix. So
– who's going to get drafted.
Right. Yeah, if you're going to knock him, maybe that's one knock, his weight and the fact that he's got 9 drops. Because some of the guys at the top of this draft have got like 1.
Yeah, they don't drop.
So, you know, given the fact that that was always a knock on Gabe Davis – and Dawson Knox has had to work very hard to overcome the things early in his career with the drops. You know, I don't know if you want to go back to that issue again.
Right.
We'll see. But he is a good player, no question about it.
Yeah, and can absolutely stretch the field.
I'll say this, though.
There's acceleration.
I got to be honest. There's like obviously 3, 4, there's probably like 6, 7 guys I would name before I'd get to Troy Franklin that I would rather have. Then, but he's a good player, and he may be one of these guys like Justin Jefferson, who's like the 5th guy taken off the board or the 8th guy taken off the board, who ends up being as good as any of them.
Anything is possible in the NFL draft. We got to take a break here. Some final thoughts on the Tweet Sheet when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, one final segment here on One Bills Live on a Monday of draft week. We wrap up the Tweet Sheet with the following comments. This one from Colin B. I fear other AFC teams loading up on offensive weapons while we pass on one because the board didn't fall right. Don't care. Address your biggest need and stay in this arms race. Well, if the value is messed up, he's not going to take a receiver just to take a receiver. Yeah. He'll move back,
That's what's hard for a lot of fans because, you know, we all have our own draft board in our head. Even if we don't write it down or have a whiteboard or do all this research, you always have your draft board in your head. And you think, well, we should have, you know, you should have taken that guy. You know, you should have taken this guy. And the Bills pass on him and said, no, he wasn't that – we don't think he's as good as you think he's good.
Yeah.
Right? So you're sitting there seeing A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas or what – all name your player – you know, Keon Coleman or whoever goes down the board and you end up taking some other player and everybody's unhappy. But the Bills don't believe – they believe they get the best guy at that spot. Yeah. And that's hard to take sometimes as a fan. But that's – you better get used to it. That's just the way it is, man.
Right.
I mean, no matter who they take.
I mean, New England is probably going to take an offensive player. We're expecting it to be a quarterback. It's likely the Jets – take Bowers if he's there, maybe even one of the top 3 receivers if they're on the board, if there's one left. I don't even know if you can rule out Brian Thomas at 10.
Right.
You know, and then the Dolphins, as we said, they need line help. So I don't know that they're going to do that. Speaking of which, Tom says, Leatu Latu to the Dolphins. He is a great athlete and pass rusher. I would hate to have to hate him. Because he is a Dolphin. Josh Allen doesn't need this guy bearing down on him.
That's well put, Tom. You'd have to hate it. You'd hate to have to hate the guy because he's on the Dolphins.
Yeah.
He's a good player. You're right.
They did lose some pass rushers, though. Van Ginkle is no longer on
that
team.
Blew his Achilles. Question mark about him coming back.
They got rid of Emmanuel Ogba. And as I said, Andrew Van Ginkle is playing elsewhere.
Leatu Latu would be a huge boost for that front, defensive front.
And they'd both be out of UCLA because that's where Jalen Phillips came out of, then went down to Miami and finished up there. So, yeah, that'd be a heck of a bookend. They have Bradley Chubb, too. So they have 3 guys they'd be running through. I think they go defensive interior or offensive line at 21. That's kind of what the needs are for the Dolphins. So just kind of hope they do that.
Well, we're going to get a chance to talk about it tomorrow. It's coming up.
We're getting one day closer. We'll see you tomorrow at 1.